Happy Sabbath, Team Atlanta. You might be asking yourself, why did he say Team Atlanta? It's not something you normally hear, is it? Well, it turns out we're surrounded by teams everywhere. Anybody that works in a modern business environment probably works in a team. It's very rare that somebody works by themselves doing one task. And it turns out, studies have indicated that the importance of teams have grown and grown. In fact, I'm going to be reading from an article here fairly extensively, so anyone that would like to get the full article, which is a fascinating read on teams, I recommend come up and I'll give you the details on it. But so that I cite all my work properly, this was an article entitled What Google Learned from Its Quest to Build the Perfect Team out of, I believe it's the New York Times. Wouldn't you know it? That's the one thing that didn't show up. It was an article from yesterday, from the 25th, so on Thursday. So, we're here to talk about teams and how teams relate to us here in the church. One study published in the Harvard Business Review last month found that the time spent by managers and employees in collaborative activities, or teams, has ballooned by 50% or more over the last two decades, and that in many companies, more than three-quarters of an employee's day is spent communicating with colleagues, so formally or informally working in teams. Studies have shown that groups or teams tend to innovate faster, see mistakes more quickly, and find better solutions to problems. Studies have also shown that people working in teams tend to achieve better results and report higher job satisfaction. So if you're blessed enough to be in a team that functions well, it's a good thing. You produce more, you end up being happier. If you're in a team that doesn't function well, as we probably all know, I'm sure everyone's been there, you tend to suffer more and produce less. So the question becomes, what makes a great team work? What leads to good teams? Well, it's interesting. I was going to ask Mrs. Beam if she was around since she works for Google, but it turns out she's not here today, so we'll have to wing it without her. This article was a description of what Google has been studying since 2012 about why their teams work. And it turns out, prior to that period of time, people had tried to understand why teams work, but they'd gone about it in an anecdotal level. They'd studied this, they'd looked at various things. So Google set off on a mission in classic Google format, and they wanted to do it data-driven. So they started a project called Project Aristotle. It started in 2012. And in that project, they wanted to understand what caused teams to work well and what caused teams not to work well. And all this, I promise, has a lot of relevance to us spiritually, so wait for it and you'll hear it. Half of you will probably get there before I do. When they started off the project, they had a bunch of assumptions. And if I were to ask everyone to throw out, what do you think is necessary for a team to work really well, it would probably be in line with what the researchers at Google anticipated as well. A lot of people would say, better people. If you put the best people together, they'll produce the best team. Or possibly, teams work better when everyone's friendly, right? So if you hang out together afterwards and you go out to bars and happy hours and you have a personal relationship, your team will work better. One of them, and I laughed at this because she's not here, but my wife is technically classified as an introvert. You may not know it, but that's the way she is. And one of the assumptions they had at Google was, if you put all the introverts together, they'll work better because they'll be stressed by the extroverts coming together. Turns out all of that was wrong. They had a lot of assumptions that they found when they got to the end of it, and it took them a few years to do so, that they were wrong. Let me read again from the article. No matter how the researchers arranged the data, so they went through and they looked at academic studies on what made teams work well, and they looked at their own teams internally, because they have thousands of teams across Google. They found it was almost impossible to find patterns or any evidence that the composition of a team made any difference. So they couldn't find a pattern, and that's what Google does, is they find patterns and they make money off of it. They couldn't find any patterns to the type of people that you put on a team having any impact on whether that team was successful. We looked at 180 teams all over the company, the researcher said. We had lots of data, but there was nothing showing that a mix of specific personality types or skills or backgrounds made any difference. The who part of the equation didn't seem to matter. Okay, I'll give you a hint. Crack your Bibles. We're about to go someplace. Some groups that were ranked among Google's most effective teams, for instance, were composed of friends who socialized outside of work. Others were made up of people who were basically strangers away from the conference room, so they found it wasn't your relationship outside of work. Some groups sought strong managers, others preferred a less hierarchical structure. Most confounding of all, two teams might have nearly identical makeups with overlapping memberships, but radically different levels of effectiveness. At Google, this is a quote from the researcher, "At Google, we're good at finding patterns," the researcher said. There weren't strong patterns here, which frustrated them. Turn, if you will, to 1 Corinthians 1:26. What you'll see in this, and it shouldn't be any surprise, is that as man researches topics, we think we understand it, we research it, we start to find the patterns eventually, and we will get to the patterns. All we do is we uncover the truth that God has already laid out in the Bible. His rules for what makes a really good team work or click are here in the pages of the Bible. So 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26 through 29. Keep in mind what Google first discovered before they figured out what did work. They figured out it doesn't matter who's on the team as to whether the team will succeed or not. 1 Corinthians 1:26. "Brothers, think about your own calling. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is nonsense in the world to make the wise feel ashamed. God chose what is weak in the world to make the strong feel ashamed. And God chose what is insignificant in the world, what is despised, what is nothing, in order to destroy what is something." So God has assembled our team, if you think of it that way, the people He's calling out in this life, not because they're phenomenal PhDs and they're areas of expertise or because they have great skills. In fact, He picked the ones that had none of those things because He was putting together a team and He was going to show the world that team's going to succeed, not because of who they are. Now, a second thing that they found in their research, before I get to what they found did actually identify or anticipate what would be a successful team, is they found that it did not matter what format the team adopted for solving the problems. Again, I quote from the article. The researchers recruited 699 people, divided them into small groups, and gave each a series of assignments that required different kinds of cooperation. One assignment, for instance, asked participants to brainstorm possible uses for a brick. Some teams came up with dozens of clever uses. Others kept describing the same ideas in different words. Another had the groups plan a shopping trip and gave each teammate a different list of groceries. The only way to maximize the group's score was for each person to sacrifice an item they really wanted for something the team needed. Some groups easily divvied up the buying. Others couldn't fill their shopping carts because no one was willing to compromise. What interested the researchers most, however, was that the teams that did well on one assignment usually did well on all of the other assignments. Conversely, teams that failed at one thing seemed to fail at everything. The researchers eventually concluded that what distinguished the good teams from the dysfunctional teams was how teammates treated one another, the right norms, as they called it, which the group culture that evolves, could raise a group's collective intelligence, whereas the wrong norms could hobble a team, even if individually all the members were exceptionally bright. So like we said, it doesn't matter who's on the team, it's another element that matters. But what was confusing was that not all the good teams appeared to behave in the same ways. Some teams had a bunch of smart people who figured out how to break up work evenly. Other groups had pretty average members, but they came up with ways to take advantage of everyone's relative strengths. Some groups had one strong leader. Other groups were more fluid, and everyone took a leadership role. This is extra-biblical, I promise it's not extra-doctrinal, but if you think about our experience in the church, and we're having a conversation about the different groups that have broken off from worldwide in time, if you look at it, there's very different leadership styles, right? United's got a style in which we've got a council of multiple elders. Other bodies have a single individual that's leading. And I'm not up here to state whether one group is more effective or more positive than another, but if you look across the Bible and you look at the history of how God has called people, there isn't a single style of governance that he uses. Different times call for different things. And that's what Google found. There was no pattern to, here's how to run a team. And in fact, explicitly, as you go through the whole Bible, you'll see a lot of instruction about what we should and shouldn't do. But you don't see a lot of instruction about, here's how to organize groups of people, and here's how to behave, and have a two-thirds quorum, and vote twice a month, or any of those things that we like to spend a lot of time thinking about. So again, Google found it's not how you run the team that determined whether the team would be successful. Now, you've all been very patient, and I appreciate that. So let's get to what Google did find worked. Turning again to the article. And I'm going to have to explain this a bit. But the essence of it was, the data that Google found indicated that the psychological safety of a team, and I'll explain that term in a second, more than anything else was critical to making a team work. We had to get people to establish psychologically safe environments, the researcher said, but it wasn't clear how to do that. What they found in that psychological safety was a team flourished and was the most successful if they had two things. One was there had to be empathy. Each team member had to care about all of their other team members and consider them and consider where they're coming from and what their needs were. And the second indicator was everyone had to show equity to each other. In the business sense, what they found was that if every member of the team had roughly an equal amount of time to contribute to the team and to talk, the team succeeded, no matter who was on it, no matter how they were structured. If instead you had a team in which the leader talked all the time and dominated, or one or two members dominated, the team didn't succeed, no matter how talented or successful or how well organized they were. Now, there's one thing that's common to both of those. God wrapped it up a lot earlier than that. So turn again to Ephesians 4, verse 16. And we'll see what God calls it. Ephesians 4, verse 16. Again, God was the one that created the teams, right? He created all the members. He's put us together as a team to grow. What does God have to say about it? In Ephesians chapter 4, 16, it says, well, I'll start back in 15 to get a little bit of context. Instead, by speaking the truth in love, we will grow up completely and become one with the head, that is, Messiah. We become one. We become a team. We become a body, right? Verse 16, in whom the whole body is united, held together by every ligament with which it is supplied, as each individual part does its job. Again, each person has their talents and things that they do. The body builds itself up in, and here's the key word, love. If I were to summarize what Google found, and they couldn't put into the terms because it's too soft and squishy in our culture, empathy, equity, these are all characteristics that come from love. When you love the other members that are on your team, you will naturally have empathy. I care about what happened to you this week. I care about either the joys or the sorrows you're going through, right? And equity. If I love you, I'm going to esteem you more important than me, and I'm going to make sure you have time to talk, that you have time to participate, right? It really boils down to love. So let's see what Christ said to his team members right before he sent them out into the world. Turn again to John 17. I think it's interesting, right here before Passover, we'll be reading these again in just a few weeks at the Passover scripture, because it was Christ's final words and his rally, if you will, of his team before he was about to be crucified. So turn to John 17, verses 21 to 23. And you'll see effectively what the head of our team said was the most important thing. Here he is, we're breaking into the thought, but he's praying to God the Father, so that they all may be one, a team, just as you, Father, are in me, and I am in you. May they also be one in us, so that the world may believe that you sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, so that they may be one, just as we are one. I am in them, and you are in me. May they be completely one, so that the world may know that you sent me, and that you have loved them as you loved me. It reminds me of the scripture that we love because God loved us first. He started the process by giving us love, which allows us to, in turn, reflect that love. That's what allows us to become a successful team. In the interest of time, I won't turn there, but you can also look at John 21, 15 to 17, which he says, This is, I think, was very interesting because it was Christ's admonition, not speaking directly to God, but speaking to his disciples, said, when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my lambs. That implies an empathy and a love and an equity for other members of the team. Care about them. Consider them important, right? And he repeats it two more times. And 16 says, and again Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he answered, yes. Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said, take care of my sheep. He's reemphasizing what's important for the team to succeed. And finally he says to John, Simon's consternation, the third time he said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. In Google speak, that would be have equity for the other team members and have empathy for the other team members. And what's funny is, in concluding this article, Google was a little perplexed. They found the pattern. They could figure out what was necessary, but they couldn't institutionalize it because you can't institutionalize empathy. You can't legislate empathy, and you can't institutionalize equity. Sure, we can each get exactly 13.5 minutes to talk, but that doesn't mean I really consider you equal. Those things require that external spark of love that only comes from God. Right? So Google could figure out the facts, but they couldn't figure out how to institutionalize and make sure that absolutely every team succeeded. Well, we have a benefit. We have God on our side, and He's building us as a team. So as we grow together as Team Atlanta and Team Christ, let's think about these things and make sure that we love one another.